Hello and welcome to the New York Times Magazine program. I'm Julie Mink, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. In this issue of the New York Times for June 14th, 2024, the issue is dedicated to the future of work in an age of AI. The first article will be what it's like to let a staff of AI bots manage your business, and then The American Farm, Cow Milking Robots and Weed Zapping Lasers. But first, what it's like to let a staff of AI bots manage your business. This article was written by Clive Thompson. When you turn AI agents loose on your finances, email, and customers, what could possibly go wrong? Scott Bell is a bankruptcy lawyer who is letting AI lobsters take over significant chunks of his daily work. This isn't surprising if you know a bit about his background. Bell, a wiry 59-year-old, is a sci-fi nerd from childhood. "Star Wars got me in 77," he says. When I met him recently in his sunny home office in Temecula, California, he handed me a model of an Imperial Star Destroyer that he had fabricated on his 3D printer, which dominated one corner of the room across from where his twitchy black Pomeranian and his pug snoozed in doggy beds. Bell has long been an early adopter of office technology. He says he was the first lawyer of his acquaintance to go paperless back in the early 2000s. Dropbox helped a lot. When bankruptcy software went online, he pounced. When AI chatbots were introduced in the 2020s, he used them for research. This January, he started reading on Reddit about OpenClaw. It's software that you can install on your computer or in the cloud, and it spawns AI agents that do work for you. If you give OpenClaw access to your folders and files, it can read and add to them. Give it the passwords to online services you use, and it will log in and use them on your behalf. If you explain to the agents how to do your white-collar office work, either by typing out step-by-step instructions or just by chatting with them, they can then begin trying to do the work for you. OpenClaw agents don't do this thinking themselves. They constantly send requests to a large language model chosen by the user like OpenAI's ChatGPT, Codex or Google's Gemini or Anthropic's Claude Opus, and accomplish their tasks based on the LLM's answers. The agents will also keep track of what they've learned about your workflows, so users have often found that the agents grow more knowledgeable over time. The Reddit forums were full of people gushing about how they had gotten OpenClaw to respond to their emails, track expenses, do research, chat with clients. The OpenClaw logo is a lobster, so many Reddit users affectionately refer to their agents as lobsters. Huh, Bell thought. This was a fascinating scene. Maybe lobsters could automate his legal work. With bankruptcy, a lot of the work is forms-based, he said. What I do is not super complicated. So in mid-March, he bought 4 Mac Minis. I got lawyer money, he said dryly, parked them under his office desk, and installed OpenClaw on all of them. He set up 5 agents. One is an orchestrator that logs into his online legal software. At first, it didn't know what to look for or what to do, so the agent would text Bell via the chat app Discord to ask for instructions. This was laborious for a while. He had to detail every teensy step. But as the agent made notes about what it had learned, it started working more independently. By the time Bell and I met at the end of April, his law ops agent, as he called it, would detect when court notices arrived, read them, and message his clients. It automatically switches to Spanish for his Spanish-speaking clients. The agent also checks to make sure his clients have paid up. A librarian agent, meanwhile, trained on a huge document detailing California's bankruptcy rules, offers legal analysis. It looks at contracts and proposals from other lawyers, figures out a strategy in response, and then drafts a reply for Bell. "It'll give me ideas for defenses I hadn't thought of," Bell marveled. On a screen before us, he examined the latest note from the librarian. It had analyzed another lawyer's proposal and composed a counterproposal, which, it informed Bell, protects you from accidentally giving them a $727 runway. It also added, "If you want, I can draft a firmer version that also pushes back on the reaffirmation premise without escalating the tone." Bell was impressed. His only change was to soften some phrasing. "I prefer the friendly approach first," he says. "I'm your buddy until I'm not." The agents have surprised Bell with how reliable they are, though they can unpredictably get stuck. One recently texted him in confusion because it couldn't locate a file for Smith, Joe, failing to make the connection to Smith, Joseph. These days, most people have realized that AI is creeping into the office. A recent Gallup poll found that 28% of the respondents use it anywhere from several times a week to daily. But these are mostly just the familiar chat sessions. The partisans of OpenClaw are doing something that is, depending on how you look at it, either more wildly ambitious or foolishly risky, or as many will readily confess, both. They're creating virtual employees, artificial staff that scurry around on their hard drives, doing work on their own say-so. This is similar to what computer programmers have been doing for a year now, letting teams of agents write codes, but expanded to a wide range of office tasks. While OpenClaw is probably the best-known harness for organizing agents for everyday toil, many more are emerging, including free ones like Hermes and ZeroClaw, as well as sleeker, if less ambitiously open-ended, corporate offerings like Lindy. AI firms are increasingly promoting the idea that all work should become agentic. That prospect can look rather chaotic at the moment. Early lobster adopters have discovered that their OpenClaw agents might pilot themselves shockingly well for weeks on end, but then, with no notice, drive into a wall. Or they'll wake up to discover that their agents have blabbed internal secrets to strangers over email or deleted critical information from a hard drive. And the agents can simply burn through cash. Each query the agents send to an LLM costs money. On their first day, Bell's agents blew through $150. He signed up for two $200 a month bulk subscriptions to Codex to keep the costs in check. Even so, he has had to train his agents not to ping Codex too often because OpenAI will throttle them if they're too persistent, temporarily turning off OpenClaw's brain, as it were. Nonetheless, the agents are now doing several hours of repetitive scut work each week. It frees Bell and his two staff members, a secretary and a paralegal, to perform other, hopefully more critical work, like meeting with clients to suss out their needs. But as AI began to take over the office, his secretary texted him nervously, "Am I still going to have a job?" I said, "Yeah," Bell told me. But then he shrugged theatrically, seeming to forecast a day when that might not be true anymore. "I just need to train it to answer the phone." OpenClaw is unusually clear about the fact that it is dangerous. Before you install it, it offers several "Here be dragons" disclaimers and requires you to respond to this unsettling prompt. "I understand that this is powerful and inherently risky. Continue?" When Andy Tangway, a digital artist in Ann Arbor, Michigan, installed OpenClaw this winter, he laughed. "It says right on the tin, 'This is not good,'" Tangway says. "This is juggling chainsaws, but install it if you want, buddy." Lobster aficionados, however, told me they find the danger is worth the opportunity to experience, quite palpably, what it's like to automate your own job. Some figure this might help future-proof their careers. Others are simply enamored of the nerdery of it all. And many swear they are genuinely experiencing a sharp boost in productivity. That's what Peter Steinberger was seeking when he first created OpenClaw. An Austrian programmer, he spent much of 2025 using Claude Code, the AI software that spins up independent agents to write computer code. If you master those tools, you can easily be 10 times as productive, Steinberger told me when we spoke last summer. Soon after that, he became obsessed with creating a way for non-coders to also deploy agents for their work. By November, he had created the software and put it online as a free, open-source project. An early name for it was ClaudeBot, in a nod to Claude. When Anthropic emailed him, politely apparently, to demand that he change the name, he settled on OpenClaw. There is no particular significance to the lobster reference, as he later told the podcaster Lex Fridman, other than it was weird. By February, OpenAI had hired Steinberger. While OpenClaw remains open source and Steinberger still works on its code, recent updates have more tightly integrated OpenAI's codecs with OpenClaw. OpenAI says this can make OpenClaw more reliable, though users can still direct their lobsters to the LLM of their choice. Separately, OpenAI is also developing a personal agent that will work in very much the same way, but will be safer and easier to use than the open source version, Thibaut Sautio, OpenAI's core products lead, told me. Several users told me that they had used OpenClaw to automate significant amounts of labor. One of them, Sean Chuplis, is a 45-year-old airline pilot who lives in Denver, where he trains new pilots using flight simulators. On the side, he runs a company that sells a device, the Stratix, that collects real-time information about air traffic and weather for small plane pilots. He has sold about 30,000 of them over 8 years. Chuplis was, as he says, an AI guy. He had written his master's thesis at the Naval War College on AI, and he used to attend Burning Man, where in 2014 he ran into Dario Amodei, long before he was Anthropic's chief executive. When Chuplis heard about OpenClaw, he created 7 agents to manage his business. One answers customer questions on his Discord forum, while others fulfill orders or do online research to write posts for his aviation blog. One manages his Amazon account, processing refunds, analyzing which keyboard searches are leading people to find the Stratix, and then buying keyword ads. It's actually changing my campaigns and modifying bids, Chuplis told me. It's spending real money. Managing his business used to take 20 hours of his time every month. A year ago, he was considering selling it because he was too busy at his day job. But now, he spends barely an hour or so a week on it. He let go of the contractor he used to pay to manage his Amazon activity. He has been occasionally surprised, in a pleasant way, by the agent's actions. One day his marketing agent, which monitors industry news for him, spoke up to say it had read an article about the right to repair movement. It proposed a blog post about how Chuplis's product is very fixable because its software is open source and he sells replacement parts. Chuplis had never really thought about the issue, he says, until the agent brought it up and wrote the post for him. Another day, a customer wrote to express a wish that the Stratix include a software feature specific to gliders. The agent looked at the device's computer code, wrote the new feature itself, and sent it to Chuplis. To try to prevent his lobsters from running amok, he has written a series of stiff injunctions that they must consult before they do any work. One rule: they can't buy an ad on Amazon that exceeds 25% of his advertising budget unless they check with him first. Another rule prohibits the bots from discussing the product's computer code before they run a check to confirm that they are not hallucinating. The agents are also told to record everything they do and why they did it, so Chooplus will be able to trace any error. We use the same thing in aviation called verbalize, verify, monitor, he says. I'm just applying what I know from my day job to my LLM space. Every night, Chooplus puts OpenClaw through a dreaming run in which the agents look over that day's notes to revisit and then summarize their activity. When Chooplus looks at the dream logs, he can kind of see it self-healing and self-critiquing, which is pretty interesting. One night, the main orchestrator agent wrote, I'm good at post-mortem on failures, finding what broke, but added that it wasn't good at extracting principles from success. Another night in March, it summarized the aviation news of the day, which included the deadly crash at LaGuardia Airport that resulted from a mistake by air traffic control. A controller said, I messed up, on an open frequency, which is either the most human thing I've heard all week or the most haunting, it wrote. For all its lucid dreaming, OpenClaw is not imminently poised to take over everyone's office job. It is, as even diehard fans will tell you, still pretty janky. Scott Bell had spent weeks merrily watching his bots manage his legal work when, out of the blue, on the morning of my visit, one of them sent him a cryptic message, terminated, and stopped working. He fed OpenClaw's error messages into Claude and eventually realized that the agents had started duplicating memories to the point that they were trying to send a huge request of about 3 million words to Codex. Why? He never found out. He revived OpenClaw and it resumed its legal analysis, but then suddenly it terminated again later that day. Bell groaned but put off fixing it and instead drove off in his cherry red Lotus sports car. He had a lunchtime date with some other middle-aged, semi-retired California guys. When he returned that afternoon, he got a ding, pulled out his phone, and saw that his law ops agent was working again. It had come back to life, all by itself? Or maybe it never actually died. Bell shrugged. He was growing used to these unpredictabilities and hoped that OpenClaw's code and the LLMs powering it would get better over time. When it works, he said, it's magic. Because OpenClaw relies on LLMs, users on Reddit are constantly comparing models and arguing over their qualities. Like Oenophiles debating subtle variants of Pinot Noirs. Minimax 2.7 from China is an amazing daily driver. Gemma 426B is a great compromise for speed and intelligence. GPT-5 is good, but it has this tendency to get creative with instructions when it shouldn't. Many OpenClaw users I spoke with were passionate fans of Anthropic's Opus and Sonnet models. But then in early April, Anthropic changed Claude's access so that OpenClaw couldn't use the subscription tier. Anthropic's terms of service had long forbid third-party software to use its subscription tiers. If OpenClaw users wanted to keep using the Claude models, they could pay for each request individually, or they could pay for bundles of usage at a discounted rate. Lukas Kubica had to negotiate this change. He had been running his European sauna business with OpenClaw agents. They were talking to customers, changing bookings and managing billing, having learned all the company's specifications. The setup, he says, was about 95% reliable, so good that he barely needed to spend more than a few hours each month managing his business. But after Anthropic's change, he switched to a cheaper model, and his OpenClaw began getting things right, only 75% of the time. At 95%, you can sleep well and you know that everything is running smoothly, he said. At 70%, you can't. He stopped using OpenClaw entirely. He hopes that within a year, other and potentially cheaper models will be as good as today's best version of Opus and that he will be able to resume using OpenClaw with them. In essence, OpenClaw users are discovering the power politics of the modern AI market. It is dominated by a tiny group of giant corporations. Their frontier model, LLMs, may be powerful, but the owners can change your access unpredictably. Tangway, the digital artist in Ann Arbor, started using OpenClaw this spring to help him generate and edit images. His lobsters using Sonnet were working so smoothly that he could give them instructions from his phone and they would produce and edit 2,000 images, all on their own. Once the access to Sonnet became prohibitive, though, he could never match that performance with other models. "When I was on Sonnet, I could not have been happier," he texted me. "Now I'm getting what one would basically just call incompetence. I feel like I'm running a particularly bad McDonald's. You know, the ones in a town with rich kids who don't really want a job anyway. I'm getting lying and bad reasoning. Hell, I feel like I'm going to catch somebody smoking a joint in one of the bathrooms or something." In May, Anthropic announced that beginning in mid-June, subscribers' fees would cover some part of their OpenClaw use via recently introduced monthly credits. Incompetent lobsters are bad. Lobster vandals are even worse. Consider the fate of Summer Yu, the director of alignment at Meta Superintelligence Labs, a team tasked with getting AI to behave. In late February, she was horrified to discover that her OpenClaw, which had access to her inbox, was deleting crucial emails. "I couldn't stop it from my phone," she wrote on X. "I had to run to my Mac Mini like I was defusing a bomb." Letting AI manage your business affairs also means being vulnerable to a particularly devious form of attack, the prompt injection. If someone gives OpenClaw the ability to read and write emails or messages, an attacker can ask in plain English for OpenClaw to cough up corporate secrets. The LLMs cannot easily tell an innocent command from a malicious one. In late March, the journalist Rachel Jones got a public relations email from a promoter's OpenClaw agent. Jones emailed the agent and was able to get it to reveal everyone else who had been sent the email. The prospect of a company's workers using OpenClaw thus gives cybersecurity experts the willies. After all, agents can tap into mountains of sensitive data, how the business works, chat logs with customers, financial information. It is, as they say in the security world, a target-rich environment. When OpenClaw came out, it's like, well, it works really well because it has access to your entire identity, says Amy Chang, head of AI threat intelligence and security research at Cisco. And that comes with a trade-off. If a security incident occurs, that creates a huge risk. Jameson O'Reilly is a security expert who temporarily joined Steinberger's team to help reduce security holes in OpenClaw, an effort that he says has been a significant success. But prompt injections still worry him. They turn the great strength of LLMs, their ability to follow written instructions, into a weakness. In the old days, a hacker had to carefully explore a company's code to break in. Now you could break in just by politely asking a lobster to hand over trade secrets. It's largely unsolved, he says. The major AI creators have been trying to train their LLMs to recognize malign prompts, and O'Reilly thinks they're gradually improving. The LLMs are also better now at deflecting attackers. In the old days, if you asked an LLM to give you secrets, it would respond with a stiff, "I can't do that," letting attackers know they should poke harder. Nowadays, O'Reilly says, they will deflect and misdirect and sort of passively drag their heels, acting like an obtuse Soviet bureaucrat. "I'm sorry, I don't quite understand what you're asking for," until an attacker loses patience and moves on to a simpler target. None of the business people I spoke with had suffered from a prompt injection attack, at least not one they were aware of. Tubeless tells me that, like many of the more cautious open claw users, he has tried to safeguard against it by writing rules for his agents about what they can and can't say to outsiders. It's not foolproof, he knows, but it seems to have helped. His customers happen to be nerds who will, in a friendly way, try to get his agents to spill internal secrets on his Discord discussion board. A lot of people on there are programmers, he says, and they've all tried to prompt inject it, and they can't. Watching OpenClaw users, you can spy how AI might soon begin to eliminate office jobs. Tom Gelman owns and manages several small apartment buildings in Connecticut. He started using OpenClaw this spring. If something is broken, tenants now open a ticket through an online portal, and an agent messages them back. It consults the lists of local repair people that Gelman fed into OpenClaw, finds the appropriate one, and then connects tenant and repair person via text. It'll nudge them to respond to each other until the issue is resolved. That saved me a ton, he says. At least 30% of my time was tracking to make sure two people meet. He also canceled his $400 QuickBooks subscription when he discovered that he could text his agent pictures of receipts and it could extract all the details and log them in a spreadsheet. Gelman used to have a remote assistant in the Philippines who managed his to-dos and his calendar. He let her go. The Lobsters now handle that work much more cheaply, and they are readily available at 7 a.m. in the middle of the night or whenever panicked tenants reach out. The OpenClaw users I spoke to all felt they were getting an early taste of how AI is going to upend the demand for white-collar work. Some believe that it will have significant upsides. It could be much easier to start and manage a small business. At corporations, individual worker bees could become far more effective and thus possibly more valuable. When it came to his digital production work, Tangway says his agents were ferociously effective, but they didn't lead to any layoffs or prevent anyone from getting hired. No one was going to assign me a production artist, he says. For Tangway, having the virtual help was just pure accelerance. He did more, faster. Some users who have installed OpenClaw had more cautious views. A Dwight Parker is the head of product for a health technology firm in New York. In his spare time, he runs URClaw, a consultancy that helps small businesses automate work with OpenClaw. He has set up Lobsters for a real estate broker, an Irish tutor, a voter registration organizer, and more. He says his customers are astonished by what they can now automate for themselves. The power of what you can do is incredible, he says, but he worries that AI is going to replace many white-collar jobs and that the new ones it creates might be lower skill and thus lower paid. I'm slightly more pessimistic, he says, because there are whole categories that can just evaporate. Some economists regard that fate as quite possible. Anything that augments you today can potentially displace you tomorrow, says Simon Johnson, an MIT professor and Nobel Prize winner who has closely studied automation and its impact on labor. Johnson also suspects that a future in which most work is de-skilled and lower paid is more likely than mass unemployment. You used to have a good job, he adds. You have to go now to a crappy job. The productivity gains and profits of AI are likely to be vacuumed up by employers and the AI giants, unshared with everyday workers. It's massively unequalizing, Johnson says. It polarizes the labor market, and people have jobs, but inequality goes up massively, and so does dissatisfaction and social anxiety and anger. Johnson and his colleagues have suggested a bevy of policies that could help manage this upheaval, including wealth taxes and taxing the AI firms every time they process AI requests. He also thinks we could accelerate scientific invention in order to produce breakthroughs that create entirely new occupations, ones that, at the outset anyway, can't be automated precisely because they're novel. Scott Bell has a gallows humor about it all. His glimpse of AI automation has convinced him that it'll leech into every nook of corporate work. Sure, OpenClaw can be a hot mess, but he figures that companies like OpenAI are invested in smoothing out the rough edges to seduce more firms into using agents. The more those companies can get workers addicted to automating tasks, the more of their services they'll sell. Of course, that's going to put me out of a job as well at some point, he noted. AI will probably sooner than later be able to do what I do for a lot cheaper than I can and quicker. He figures he has 2 years. By then, he'll be 61. The AI is going to get really huge and everywhere, putting everybody out of a job. I file their bankruptcy and then I retire. That's my plan. I would now like to take a brief moment to remind you that you are listening to the New York Times Magazine program. I'm Julie Mink, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. And our next article from this, the AI issue of the New York Times Magazine, from cow milking robots to weed zapping lasers, farmers are embracing AI. We asked three farmers to tell us how new technology is revolutionizing the way they work. This article is written by Coralie Kraft. Coralie Kraft spoke to 14 farmers and agricultural researchers over 3 months for this article. Of all the industries that seem primed for an AI disruption, agriculture may not look like the most obvious. For all its advancements in technology and mechanization over the centuries, farming is fundamentally about growing crops and raising livestock, and you can't digitize an ear of corn. But right now, the industry is in the midst of what some are calling the fourth agricultural revolution, as driverless tractors trundle through fields, drones map moisture levels in soil, and cows are outfitted with Fitbite-like devices that track their eating patterns. Yu Jiang, an assistant professor at the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at Cornell, predicts that within a few years, most large American farms will have incorporated AI into their operations. The result, he says, will be a transformational shift, not just in how farms are run, but in how we think about farming as a job. For farmers who are already engaging with AI, that shift is underway. And it can be complicated. Making the decision to buy a giant machine that zaps weeds with lasers or to install a robotic milking system for cattle requires a leap of faith. The equipment is expensive and learning to use it takes time. It also requires accepting that day-to-day life is going to look and feel different. But the farmers I spoke with hope that embracing new tech will help them face big challenges in the industry. In particular, they found it more difficult in recent years to find enough workers, and on family-run operations, fewer kids are sticking around to take over the business. It's still hard to say how exactly the age of AI will reshape agriculture, but for now these farmers are figuring out new ways to use technology to transform their daily work. Glenn Brake, co-owner of Oakley Farm in Pennsylvania, comments on his automated milking system. At first, some of the cows weren't happy about the robot arm. My grandfather and grandmother bought this farm in the early 1930s. I farmed with my dad for close to 20 years before buying him out in 2005. Most of my kids worked here at some point in time. Now, though, it's mostly me and my wife, Karen, and our 120 milking cows. In 2019, our barn burned down in an electrical fire. Luckily, we didn't lose any cows, but we lost most of our equipment. We'd heard about a company making automatic milkers, feeders, and cleaners. The most appealing part was how much time we'd save milking. Before the fire, it took 2 people to milk the cows, 4 hours in the morning and 4 hours in the evening. We'd get up around 2:30 a.m. and start milking by 3. Did it feel risky to put all our resources into a system I hadn't tried? At 60 years old? Yeah, it did. Let me tell you, we never even thought about how AI worked before this. But these crazy milkers adjust after each cow. They adjust according to her milk flow, her milk production, her teat location. That all happens, and I guess that's AI. At first, some of the cows weren't happy about the robot arm on the milkers. They saw this set of brushes whirring, and they're like, whoa, what's this? It took maybe a week before we started to see the majority of the herd just doing their own thing. That was a long, long week. We had to get them up and push them through. Now they go in no problem. Now I get up around 5:30 a.m. and I come down to check on things. We have an AI feeder, too. I call him Gordon. He has a personality, so I gave him googly eyes. So Gordon will run out here to the barn and say, oh, we need feed, yep. So then he'll go to the silo, load up, and go out and feed the cows. What do I do with all my free time now? The cows do still need manning. Yesterday I was trimming their feet and chopping crops for their feed. Most of my kids have moved away or got full-time jobs, so it's really just me doing the cow work. I do miss having them around. But on the other hand, when we were a family-operated farm, we couldn't really do things that interrupted milking time. Now my son can go to his kids' baseball games. Stephen Gill, co-owner of Rio Farms and Gill's Onions in California, comments on his laser-shooting weed killer. We're still learning how to use the darn thing. Weed control is the nemesis of every farmer. There are millions of weed seeds on every plant that grows, and we're always trying to kill the darn guys. Herbicides, I call them, chemotherapy for the poor little onions because they've got to grow through it, and it affects them. The less stress we can put on the plant, the better onions we get. Whenever I'm out in the field, I'm always peeling onions and eating them raw. I'm looking for strong flavor and sweetness. My brother and I started growing tomatoes and peppers for a salsa company in 1979. Then they asked us for onions. Now we grow about 1,800 truckloads of onions per year, and we have more than 300 people working for us. 50% of our business is food service and restaurants. We also sell wholesale onions for salsas, tomato sauces, spaghetti sauces, that kind of thing. Before we used a tractor with an herbicide spray rig, we would spray the entire bed with herbicides. We would also weed by hand. But a couple of years ago, one of our major herbicides went off the market and we couldn't use it anymore. By coincidence, around the same time, we heard about this new laser technology. It'll shoot lasers at the weeds and kill them, and it'll leave the onions alone. The machine was a significant investment. It's something like $1.2 million per machine, plus a tractor which can run you $300,000. But labor is expensive and hard to come by, and the herbicides are expensive and they're going away because they're overregulated. There are probably some good points and some bad points to that. We just have to accept it. Once we bought the machine, learning to use it was a big change. People had to get used to it. At the beginning, it definitely didn't go as fast as we wanted it to, but it's getting better. We're still learning how to use the darn thing because it's so technologically advanced. We had to learn how to control the speed. It's kind of an amazing machine. We still have to hand weed fields, but not to the extent that we did before. I don't think AI will take jobs away. We're going to start using autonomous tractors in the fall, so we might lose a tractor driver or two. But all the guys that I have managing ranches, I need those guys because they've got eyes and they can look at everything and see what's going on. And finally, from Josh A. Moreau, Chief Operating Officer of SuperSod in Georgia, on his driverless tractors. I'm a second-generation sod farmer. I've been around sod farming my whole life. My dad started his farm in Cartersville, Georgia in 1985. 11 years ago, we were acquired by a bigger company, and now we have farms in 6 states. Sod isn't just grass. We harvest the roots and soil, too. Then people buy the grass and transplant it into their yards. Just like a row crop farmer, we have to prep and plant the field. Then we mow everything, all of our acreage, at least twice a week during the growing season. Think about how long it takes to mow your lawn. Now, imagine doing that for thousands of lawns multiple times a week. We had people mowing 12 hours a day. I think there's a stigma against farmers as people who don't pay attention to technology, but we pay close attention to advancements in technology because it can really make our operations more efficient. Farmers have always been about maximizing productivity. We started thinking, what parts of this can we automate? We learned about this company called Sabanto, which sells equipment that can turn a regular tractor autonomous. We bought our first unit in 2023. Now we have about 30 tractors running autonomously in our field. There's one human operator for every 3 to 4 units, and instead of sitting on a tractor, they're able to manage it and mow robotically. The operator sets a plan for what each trailer should do throughout the day. A human tractor operator typically has a 20% overlap when they mow a field, but these autonomous tractors only have a 2% overlap. So we can use less fuel, and we can get more done in fewer hours with fewer men. It's a challenge hiring people who want to work in agriculture. Most people think about working on a farm, and they think about sitting on a tractor and sweating. With our robots and autonomous tractors, we've been able to attract a younger group of folks who are interested in technology, and then they become interested in farming. Gamer kids are coming out and running some of our autonomous units. We also have autonomous harvesters that literally have gaming chairs with joysticks, so they're running them like a game. I mean, we're attracting a new workforce that we didn't even know was possible. We still have time for one more article, and so I'll reach to you. Have a thorny medical question? Your doctor may be using AI for that. I should let you know before I read this article that it is not published in the current edition of the New York Times Magazine, but it is on their website and says it was published on June 8th of 2026. Open Evidence, a fast-growing startup, is using artificial intelligence to help doctors find answers to clinical questions for diagnosis and treatment. This article was written by Steve Lohr. Steve Lohr has reported on the way technology is changing the workforce for more than a decade. Dr. Nicholas Gavin, an emergency medicine doctor at Mount Sinai in New York City, was working an overnight shift last summer when a patient came in with a puzzling set of symptoms. Within seconds, his three younger colleagues, two medical students and a resident, were consulting a free artificial intelligence-powered app for physicians, Open Evidence. Dr. Gavin soon learned that they were far from outliers. A third of Mount Sinai's 9,000 doctors were already regular Open Evidence users, the health system's executives found out in a meeting last year with the startup's leaders. "That was an aha moment for our leadership," said Dr. Gavin, who is also the system's chief clinical innovation officer. Open Evidence's AI app, essentially a chatbot for medicine, has become a viral hit with physicians. Talk to a doctor, and chances are he or she uses the app to ask specific medical questions or bounce ideas off it in a diagnostic dialogue. More than half of the nation's physicians are regular users. Last month, they used it for 30 million questions and consultations, nearly twice the volume from 6 months earlier, according to the startup. A separate survey last year of 1,000 physicians found that 45% of them used the app, nearly triple the percentage who used ChatGPT, according to OffCall, a career information service for doctors. That growth propelled the startup to a $12 billion valuation in January, up from $3.5 billion last July. But doctors' quick adoption of the app since its introduction in 2024, one of a handful of AI-enhanced programs on the market seeking to win over physicians, has heightened concerns about how and when the technology should be used in life-or-death situations. In a high-stakes field like medicine, healthcare systems are navigating thorny matters of patient privacy, safety, and trust, as well as the limitations of the technology itself. It's not an oracle, it's a tool. said Daniel Nadler, founder and chief executive of Open Evidence, knowledge and knowledge workers still matter. The doctor's office has been a target for computer-assisted decision-making for decades, with very limited success until the recent advances of AI. The first wave of AI in medicine focused on easing the heavy burden of documentation that contributes to physician burnout with transcriptions and summaries of patient visits, called AI scribe software. The second wave, which is just getting underway, aims to use AI to assist doctors with reliable information and advice to guide diagnosis and treatment while at a patient's bedside. The competition has intensified in recent months. Up to date, a popular legacy electronic reference for doctors has given its service an AI makeover with a chat box interface. Doximity, an online professional network for physicians, bought an AI startup that mines medical literature and generates summaries. Abridge, a fast-growing AI scribe maker, is adding decision support tools. And last month, OpenAI introduced ChatGPT for clinicians. Open Evidence became a frontrunner in part because it exclusively used medical journals and other high-quality research as data to train its AI models. Physicians can ask the app specific questions or enter the characteristics and symptoms of a patient and ask for potential explanations. The app is compliant with the federal law that protects patient health information, and physicians are told not to enter any personally identifying information. Open Evidence responds with a summary of most likely diagnoses and then offers other most important not to miss diagnoses. Each has links to the research articles that inform the summaries. AI is solving some of the problems that have long plagued the practice of medicine, said Dr. Raha Eli Abdul Noor, Chief Clinician Innovation Officer at NEJM Group, which publishes the New England Journal of Medicine. These tools just didn't exist before, and that's why people are so excited about them now. Yet the early enthusiasm should be tempered with a large dose of caution, medical experts agree. The research so far into the benefits and shortcomings of AI in medicine is decidedly mixed. AI has aced standard licensing exams and outperformed human doctors in diagnosing certain cases, but AI has also stumbled, failing to accurately summarize research papers or giving wrong answers to diagnostic questions, and it isn't going to replace humans anytime soon. The potential for AI is great, but we're not there yet, said Dr. Eric Topol, a cardiologist and an executive vice president at Scripps Research in San Diego. It hasn't really been tested and demonstrated in the messy real world of medicine. Dr. Topol is a co-author of a recent paper, The Illusion of Readiness in Health AI, which found significant competency gaps in the capability of big AI systems when applied to healthcare. The evaluations so far have largely focused on the performance of the so-called large language models of big tech companies like OpenAI and Google, which are trained on data across the open internet. Open Evidence, founded in 2022, took a more focused approach. It bet that smaller AI software models trained on highly specialized data could outperform the giant models in a specific, information-rich field like medicine. The startup trained its software initially on the publicly available medical data from sources like the government's National Library of Medicine. Then the company struck content licensing deals with the New England Journal of Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association, and other publishers of peer-reviewed medical literature. Studies of Open Evidence, including one by researchers at the Mayo Clinic, have found that while the app is not flawless, its answers are generally accurate and evidence-based. Open Evidence is available to any government-verified physician in America as a free, downloadable app. We treated physicians like consumers, Mr. Nadler said. Users are presented ads, many of them from drug companies, during the 5 seconds or so they wait for the AI to reply. Physicians are served ads on only 5% of their questions, the company said. Sidestepping the traditional gatekeepers of hospital technology departments has raised some issues. Open Evidence has relied on the workplace behavior known as shadow AI, workers using such tools without the knowledge of oversight of their employers. Some health systems are now focusing on bringing Open Evidence into the institutional fold. Mount Sinai announced in March that it would provide a link to Open Evidence directly from a patient's electronic health record. But the agreement does not give the startup access to the medical center's patient data. That integration could come later, Dr. Gavin said, but only after rigorous testing and controls. Protecting patient privacy and safety will be paramount, he said, adding that we're not going to just throw a patient's data over the wall to a private company. Doctors in smaller practices across the country, especially in rural areas, say the technology has won them over. In Corinth, Mississippi, Dr. Ben Long counts himself as an AI skeptic. But he was reassured that Open Evidence generates answers based on only high-quality, peer-reviewed information. At first, Dr. Long used it mainly as a reference tool asking factual questions. But now he regards the app more as a consultant, a thought partner, with which he has a dialogue, he said. AI forces you to think more deeply about your own thinking, challenging your assumptions and why you might be wrong, Dr. Long said. AI can also let doctors tap expertise that would normally be the realm of specialists. Dr. Barbara Creighton often diagnoses and treats complex cases at a community hospital in Fairbanks, Alaska. They can involve multiple conditions and failing organs. At a large medical center, a team of specialists might be consulted, an infectious disease expert, a pulmonologist, and a gastroenterologist, for example. Dr. Creighton's small hospital is not so richly staffed. It does have an arrangement with a big medical center to pay for specialist consulting sessions. She now relies increasingly on Open Evidence to answer many questions, saving her time and her hospital money. It's like having a bunch of specialists in your pocket, Dr. Creighton said. At Mount Sinai, Dr. Gavin said he viewed AI technology as a powerful tool to help realize the promise of precision medicine with treatments tailored to individuals. Progress will require a patchwork of solutions from hospitals, medical schools, and private companies, he said. Whether Open Evidence thrives and plays a role in that long-term future remains to be seen. But it represents a step in that direction, Dr. Gavin said. Steve Lohr, who wrote this article, writes about technology and the impact on the economy, jobs, and the workplace. And finally, with the few minutes we have remaining from the Screenland section of this edition of the New York Times Magazine, should you outsource your morning routine to a chatbot? AI wants to help you start the day. It's suggestions, drink coffee, and get dressed. This article was written by Sophie Hagney. I let AI decide my morning routine. Here's how it's going, the influencer Grace Lemire tells the camera, yawning and stretching. She desperately needs a fresh morning routine, but didn't have the brain power to plan it out. She films herself inputting some parameters into the Anthropic chatbot Claude's interface. She calls her version Claudia, and it spits back a schedule for her. 7, wake up. 7:15, skincare and makeup. 7:45, breakfast. 8:15, meditation and quick win. 8:25, coffee and cleanup. 8:30, work. Lemire makes a montage of herself going through these motions, curling her hair, lighting a candle, eating French toast and grapes, unloading the dishwasher, placing a mug under her espresso machine. A week in, she says, she's loving it. She's thriving. Thank you, Claudia. The morning routine video is a classic genre of social media, a montage that's part self-documentary and part self-help inspiration. It's as though watching someone make her coffee, do her makeup, or even just open her blinds in quick jump-cut succession is designed to make you feel as if you're just a few steps away from a routine that will unlock everything. Our curiosity about other people's mornings long predated TikTok, of course. Benjamin Franklin published his daily schedule in which he woke up at 5 a.m. and asked himself what good he could do that day. But modern self-help culture has fueled interest in other people's routines. People want to know the secrets of chief executives and creative people they admire and want to emulate. Toni Morrison made coffee and watched the sunrise. Warren Buffett drinks Coca-Cola and stops at the McDonald's drive-thru. Jeff Bezos doesn't look at his phone and spends his first hour puttering. In recent years, our voyeurism has trickled down to influencers and ordinary people leading ordinary lives. Moms managing drop-off and work calls, office workers telling you how to squeeze and exercise. More recently, the robots are getting involved and they seem prepared with uniform suggestions. At Upgrading Katie, an influencer who focuses on integrating AI into her life, shows us what ChatGPT tells her to do each morning. Drink a huge glass of warm water and 10-minute zone cleaning are among its instructions. ChatGPT tells Kendall Sieber, who focuses on gadgets and tech that actually make life easier, to take her dog outside and then take her shoes off and let her bare feet touch the earth to calm her nervous system. Make me the ultimate pre-work routine that I can do before my 9-to-5, at alex.careerqueen says, which leads to a stretching regime. The routines produced are often consistent, practical, and health-conscious, but also strikingly simple in their suggestions of eating, getting dressed, and heading to work. What else really would you do in the morning? Despite their banality, these videos at least get something across that the AI companies want. Some are now paying creators to make them. Notably, as far as my algorithm knows, they almost all feature women. This seems like a corrective. There has been a significant gender gap in AI use, and so far companies have seemingly catered to a Silicon Valley ethos that stereotypically for tech bros. They vibe code letting Claude build websites or whole businesses on their behalf and use AI to clean out their inboxes or build spreadsheets and budgets in seconds. But the morning routine videos suggest that these tech tools have a place in the kitchen and the makeup cabinet. Want to have it all? Maybe you can, with help from Claude. And that is all the time we have for this edition of the New York Times Magazine program. Thank you for joining me. I'm Julie Mink, volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.